Mr. Mervyn, Reel 6. You were mentioning the spiders. What were...
Well, the top end of the camp, but our, the lower part of the camp, and the huts were timber. And they were, I suppose, they called the spiders because they went out like arms, sort of like legs out of a spider, a central column. With, I think, from the ablutions were in the middle. And they just were like the wooden huts. But they're all interlinked, you know, and that was where you were sort of after you'd finished your training, you was 8 weeks, then you had a leave, and you went back, and you were put in these spiders, like holding the transit, to wait for your ship, or wait for whatever you wanted to send, because you would then be void of the training, you'd finished your training, you were just doing in back again, you were doing cleaning pans and picking leaves up or cutting grass, anything to keep you occupied. You see, you finished your training, and where you'd been, there was another squad of lads in.
So what was your billet like when you moved down there to Strensville?
What was the thing?
How big was it? How many beds were there in each dormitory?
Maybe 20.
So they're quite large dormitories.
Proper brick buildings.
Were you in with the same group of people?
Yeah, I did all them, you know, all the line. Of course, with it being Somme and Salamanca, well, you knew everybody in Somme, because I was in Somme.
So it was still the Somme training squad, and you were still...
But you weren't called that, because you were just, I can't remember what we were called, but Somme and Salamanca were merged together, and, you know, you'd manage to take two, so, you know.
What was there, a single story building?
Yes, single story.
And was there just one dormitory in each building or two?
Just the one. One room.
What sort of furniture would you have in there?
Just a bed and a locker.
A locker for your personal effects?
Well, the army effects, you didn't have any personal effects. You didn't have any work they carried, you just had kit bags. If you could always get your army gear, then never mind any extra personal gear. You just had army kit.
No other furniture in the dormitory?
No. I don't think there's any seats out there. You just sat in your bed when you could.
How was it heated?
Once a year, I can't remember. I think they might have had radiators in it.
Was it more?
It was a brick one.
Was it more comfortable than Bransford?
Oh, Bransford, it was better than Bransford.
What about toilets and washing facilities?
No, they were attached to the place, and there was a nappy in the canteen, and obviously cookhouse, an armoury, a real put-around camp, what we did in Bransford.
Did you still have to keep your dormitory clean?
Oh, every day.
You said it was spotlessly clean.
And they would, every week, you had a folder. Once again, you had the same thing for your blankets and your sheets in your bed, folded up, and everything had to be spot on. Then you were in the room, and your gear was inspected. I think maybe every Saturday it would be like a big inspection, The room had to be spotless. Every day, like every Saturday, you have to be extra, because they got an extra look. And there was an officer maybe came around and said it was the sergeant. And, maybe if it wasn't up to his expectations, you wouldn't get any leave that weekend or something like that. Or okay, we'll give you a weekend pass or something like that. It was a little sweet, a few weeks and that, and maybe for a weekend pass or whatever, But it wasn't when you only rested to keep it clean. And everybody had a job to do. You were responsible for your own bed space. So obviously, 10 beds down that side, so everybody's, so all that side's going to be clean. And somebody would be detailed to do the centre. Somebody would be detailed to do something else. Maybe if there's a code book at there, polish it, clean it. Or there would be fire buckets. in Dalsby, a one of water and a one of sand. And the water had to be fresh, you know, there had to be no bits of dust floating on top of the water. So just before the inspection was going, they would hide out and fill it with fresh water. The sand had to be cleansed, you know, it had to be sort of brushed at the top, no tap end stuck in it or out like that. And they had to be there, and it would be a fire extinguisher. And that would be somebody's responsibility to make sure. And then the ablutions, the toilets, somebody else would have to be responsible for that. You know, everybody in the hut was responsible for everything, you know, and if the person who was doing something, we'd get hammering up the lads, you know.
Who was in charge then of your hut?
Corporal, would be corporal in charge.
Would he be in the hut with you?
He'd have a little hut in the end. Could be a tip.
As long as your bit was clean.
They never went in, inspectors, but, you know. And then he was burning and stuff. He just shut the door and that was it. No respect would be on there.
Where did the permanent staff come from then for the strands?
Well, the lads who were good at cricket or good at football, they would be put on the permanent staff. Or there would be lads who, obviously you've got to have office clerks, you've got to have coops, and you've got to have the instructors.
So there was a mixture of battalions represented, mixture of regiments represented in the permanent staff.
Predominantly maybe it's Kiley, because it was a Kiley base camp. But you would maybe get a occasional structure corporal or somebody who did it. As I say, you know, if you see a certificate and you never want somebody, you would maybe get it. I mean, there's a lad who got transferred from the Durhams into the Colleys because he was a good cricketer. He went down to Stenson, of course, Yorkshire's cricket, you see, well, what Durham is. And they found out that, you know, you put on what your first time to cricket, and I think we did a little bit, played a bit more sport down there, a bit more time. And they found out you was a good cricketer, so it's like, they were transferring you from the DIY to the Colleys. So he went on the permanent staff. So he could then become a clerk or something on the camp, and he would represent the camp of playing cricket, or football, or boxing, or whatever.
So they weren't all regular soldiers then,
the
permanent staff?
No. You see, the army was going through the phase, or had gone through the phase, where the men who fought during the war, they were all out, they were all coming out. There wasn't many regulars, really. And so, with them coming out, I was explaining, I said, there's Malaya, there's Kenya, there's Ceylon, there was Hong Kong, you know, everywhere the army had to go and sort of keep the peace and do that. And so the National Service, that's why National Service was brought in, and everybody just went, you know.
So apart from your own huts then in Strensel, I take it would have a naffy as
nothing
usual. And what sort of things could you get there?
Oh, you could get beans on toast, chips.
What about that?
Buy sweets.
Alcohol?
Yes. But you got any money. You're very poorly paid. You didn't have any money to go and
Were there any other departments represented there in Strensel? Was there a motor transport section?
Well, there would be. They would have their own wagons, you know, jeeps. There wasn't any armour or anything there. It was just vehicles, you know.
What about food? Was there a canteen? Where did you eat?
In an army canteen, you know, like the same at Bransworth. I think we were allowed to walk down the street, so we didn't get marched down. There was a time, obviously 12 o'clock or something like that, and you went down. When I say you didn't get marched down, you had to walk down quick, but you didn't get paraded down. And you got breakfast, dinner, tea, and there was supposed to be a supper, but it was only a cup of tea and what was left for dinner. You know, and people, if they had any money, would go to the naffy and buy beans on toast. You know.
What was the food like there?
Typical army food. It was edible. That's it, no more. sometimes it would be fresh potato, sometimes it would be like mashed potato. You know what? You get now like powdered potato, put milk to it or water and fluff it in the potato. And I only cook, it's all things the same. They're like robots, you know, you go along with your plate and there'll be a cook and he's standing behind this potato, big dish of potato, and he's got the one portion, just like that, and like that. And he would say, no, is it potato or mash? And he would say, mash, and you just pulled your plate away, but he was already in the motion, there was big dollops of mash on the thing where people didn't want it, you know, and it was just going like that, and then if it was a sausage, you'd plonk the sausage on the plate, or if it was egg, you'd plonk an egg on the plate. And that was it. You didn't show it yourself.
Were there still the same kit inspections?
Yeah. Kit had to be up to standard. Brass is polished. web and blackboard. And then when we went to... I think after we finished that training, we changed from the blackboard webbing to like a jungle green webbing. Well, you didn't have brasses, they were like alloy and it was all painted black. Obviously, you didn't want brass shining in sun and in daylight and that. You should have had like a green, a jungle green.
How often were these kit inspections? Was it a daily occurrence?
The main one every week, but it was up to everybody to keep the kit clean. You know, if you didn't keep it clean, it was hard at the end of the week to get it off. It was paid you to keep it clean every night. I mean, your boots were polished every night and bowled every night. Your bayonets and your scabbing, your weapon was black cord and clean.
Was there a morning parade?
Every morning. It was like muster parade. You used to have to do what was called company orders at night. There's an order put up every night, and you must read that every night. And it'll tell you what's happening every day, and it'll tell you if your name's down for a guard duty, and it'll tell you if you've got a report somewhere, and it'll tell you what company's on duty for whatever, for fire picket, and everything. You know.
What happened if you were short of kit?
Yeah, good. Steal it off somebody else. Somebody, you didn't, you know, I mean, you don't really lose a kit, like, you know, or somebody who's plugged it somewhere. And
what was discipline like down there compared with Brunswick?
Just the same, very strict. That was just instilled in you to do with your talk. You didn't have a mind, you couldn't think of yourself, you couldn't think, you weren't. I think that's what I objected to the most, that you weren't allowed to think for yourself. You had to think the way you weren't allowed to think. Yeah, they told you what to do. Yeah. You go there, so it's full of water, you go there. You know. Lying, that's pretty different. Lying. Yeah.
Was the same system of jankers?
Yeah, oh, it's throughout the army. Jankers is. A small misdemeanor. Guard rooms for the serious, more serious, and the one with that is a permanent.
So, what sort of thing would get you jankers, and what sort of thing would get you guard in the guard room?
Fighting would get you jankers. But I suppose if you're persistent, they would lock you up. You know, shall I say, jankers was the first punishment.
So if that didn't work, you would get locked up eventually?
Yeah, if you were persistent.
So was it the same kind of routine as it was at Brunswick? Jankers for the same sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. And the same thing happened. If the coop went somewhere from the coop and radio, we'd say to the sergeant, well, could there were three lads tonight. And if you were like, last one out, the showers, last one out, you put last one here, and you've got three men. You went down and cleaned the pans up, you know, in your own time, you know. What should have been your free time, Yeah, we weren't doing any
You just touched on duties. What duties did you have to do at Strensel?
What did that do? So
what did that? How was that organised?
We were going to camp, you know. Well, once again, we detailed the day. We called one detail and we were down to do it tonight.
How many men would be detailed for that?
Maybe there were 6 or 10 for the night. You know, you walk around in pairs with a sailor, a candle, and the old bicycle front lamp, you know, which they fit on the front. And then you walk around with a couple of pick handles and a torch. And what is supposed to be there, I don't know. But there was one fellow who was there, the IRA acted up a bit. I mean, they weren't exactly the same as what they are now. He gave us a rifle, but he didn't give us any ammunition.
And that's the only time you've given a rifle on guard duty?
No.
So what did you have to do on guard duty? Just guarding the perimeter?
Just walk around the perimeter. It's the closest to anybody breathing in the camp. It's a small thing coming to paint on you, know, any civilian or something like that. You know, civilians are like in the camp, other than the ones who work there. I mean, it was a military camp. Nobody worked with Connie there.
And how long was that for? Was that all? No, this guard duty, how long was it for? Was it 24 hours?
Well, mainly at night time. You would report maybe at 6 o'clock at night, depending on what time of the year it was. When it was getting dark, you would report to the guard. You'd be detailed, you'd report to the guard room. There would be a guard, a sergeant who was a guard commander there. And he would say, right, well, you two out 6 to 8, you know. And you'd come in, and another two, 8 or 10. And then another two, and then you would be out again. But there was a bed for you to sleep in the guard room when you weren't on duty. And they used to send up, sometimes if there was any prisoners, they would say, right, well, the prisoner and the regimental police would go up to the cook house, and the prisoners would have to bring big churns of tea down for you, you know, and so you could get some tea. And that sort of thing.
How often did you have to do that in your 8 weeks there?
Well, not very often, because there's that many lads training, you know. You didn't get the day off, like, you'd be doing training during the day, you'd be in guard all night, you just carried on the next day as normal. You didn't get any time. Because of being on guard, you couldn't go and lie down. You had to go out again, you know. But in between, that was the guard.
What other things were there?
Well, the jungle lads were reporting at 6 o'clock in the morning to the guard commander, you know. He would have the names of everybody who was on jungles and ticked it off, you know. Have a look at you. I will come back to you an hour later, you know. And then that went on, obviously, during the day and the training, we didn't report there. But the jungles was that you had no time to yourself. You were doing something. And your only time for yourself was after about, I don't know, about past 10 at night. And then you had to get your gear ready for the next day.
What was picket duty?
Well, that was like the same as being on guard, the fire picket.
What did that consist of? How was that organised?
Just look around, make sure there were no fires on the camp. And I think there will be a member of the permanent staff who would show how the, I mean, you got around in those days, it was just like a keystone cops where you put a trolley or something with a foot on a bucket of water or something like that, a steel foot. But there would be somebody there who would know it, but you would surely be there for a fire picket, like the camp fire brigade, to pull it out, you know, if you could.
How often did you get that then?
Well, once again, it wasn't very often because there's that many members on the staff, on the camp. You see, you know, if you've got a few hundred lads, you try to share it out, you know. Sometimes they would say, well, I'll put you on extra guard duty if you've done a bit of swimming wrong, or your boots go under the standards.
Any other duties?
Unless you were delivering coal to the, but sometimes that was a permanent staff, they would have a coal man, you know, for the road my family, my quarters were around Strensel, and obviously they were all coal fired. And so I think the coal would be delivered to the camp, you know, and then the coal lads who deliver so many bags of clothing each house, you know, for the heating of the house and the, you know, cold detail.
You mentioned before, you touched on it, there was more recreational activity, more sport.
I think there might have been a bit more spare time.
What did you do with this spare time, can you remember?
Sometimes went down to New York. Obviously you couldn't go on the weekend, you didn't have the money for the train fare to come up, and then it was about an hour and a half, 2 hours on the train.
So was the weekend leave?
Yeah, well, you could go out on a Saturday night, you had to be in by midnight, there was nowhere else to go. You had no money to go to the camp, like there wasn't a cafe, so you couldn't go and buy, you hadn't any money, so you had to come back to camp to get fed. You know, so you just sort of lay on your bed, or maybe go out and have to kick around somewhere on the weekend when there was no duties to be done. And I suppose that's when you had to play a bit of football, or where they found the cricketers or something like that, you know.
Did you have much contact with the local civilian population?
No, really. Not by, we just didn't mix. We just didn't go.
You didn't go into any of the local pubs?
No, I didn't. You know, you could really only afford one night on the pub, and that was it. So we just stay and have 2 nights in the nappy, and go outside in the pubs. And then sometimes, in those days, people didn't know very well. Think much of soldiers. I suppose maybe you get the odd ones who are going to start trouble somewhere.
I was going to say, did you ever come across any trouble?
Well, not me, I was big enough, not really bother business, you know. There was always trouble brewing somewhere. There was a lot of, more so when I got the battalion and when I got to Egypt, there was a lot of, soldiers had a bad name for fighting. They had a bad name for fighting among themselves, and they had a good name for fighting battles and wars. But they had a bad name for fighting, you know. And you would see lads, you know, scrapping about in the camp, you know, in the quarters there. But if they were outside, and somebody was picking on them, they would go and help, you know, they'd knock the hell out in the camp. And if one was getting picked on by a paddler or something like that, they'd be straight in and you know, so I don't know. There was a lot of, there was nobody allowed to call the Derrams except the Derrams, you know what I mean? You could call them all the names under the sun as long as you were another Derramite, that somebody, that a coyote or a guardsman or something to see out and be held on. It was funny that way.
Was there much contact with the local female population?
Oh, there were plenty of women round about. They used to flock into the army camp round about. But then again, you didn't have the money to go out with them much.
Did you yourself go out very much into York? Or
I went down once or twice. Went down to a pub called the Ewes Bridge or something. We used to go, it was next to the Ewes. They had the marks on the wall where every time the ooze overflows, and they had the marks on the wall, the height, the different heights in the year weren't a thing. And it was a place where the girls used to go on that.
Did many of the lads fall foul of any women?
Nobody wanted to get married anyway. Nobody had women coming up saying this, that, and the other. As I say once again, you didn't really have any money to treat them or to take them out anyway.
Was there any warning about getting involved with women and catching diseases?
There was, especially on the boat going out, there was film shows. Really awful. Put you off forever. but yeah, you had plenty of warning, you know, the medical officer came and you had lectures and not so much in this country, but when you go abroad.
Was there anything else to do at the camp on an evening or any free time?
I'm not sure, the camp cinema, the Naffy cinema. But once again, pulling your kit up. You know, you still have your best boots pulled up, and you still have a parade in your best gear, maybe it's on a Saturday morning. And then we had to be pulled up and sparking. And your kit still had to be squared up with everything had to be on your best boots. The bottom soles had to be polished, had to be 13 studs in, no more than 13 studs, and had to be in a certain way. All right, the studs of your boots were, I forget how it was, but there was, you know, say 3, 4, 2, 1 or something like that.
Had to be arranged in a certain way.
All right, well, you didn't do it, they went to the cobblers. You know, and they were put in that way. I mean, you couldn't get wrong with it. But if there was any studs missing, then you were supposed to report, you know, like that. And that had to be in a certain way. And obviously, there was the heel, you know.
So how long would that take you on an evening to pull your boots? And
well, in the first 6 weeks, you would expect to have them up to a certain standard. Like a toe cap and a heel cap would be really bright, like what you say, the guards or the thing, you know. Then after that, you start to work on the rest of the boot, you know, and you just continually pull your boots. And while you were pulling your boots, you also had your working boots. You had to keep them clean as well. And you had your PE kit, you had your pencil shoes and that, you know, for all those sanctuaries, you still had to clean them, you know. So your rifle had to be cleaned, and then the shed, not the shed, the bikes had to be
Was there much gambling?
Yeah, there were not a lot, not the next step. In every group of lads, we all want to find a gambler. The one who got a pack of cards tucked away somewhere and helped for a game of bag or on pill or something like that. There'll always be somebody who have a go. But they're like a little click, a little the gamblers, you know.
Was it discouraged?
Well, it was done on the quiet. it wasn't open, you know, if a sergeant, well, you know, getting out of the way. But it went on, yeah.
Did you have much contact with home?
Letters. Yeah. Couldn't afford to travel up that train. You didn't get. You only got. Actually, I think the army owes us some money. You've got so many travel warrants a year to come home on the train. I don't know how many it was, but I think I only had about two in the 2 year. I mean, you know, you reckon if you're in Germany, you came home for leave from Germany, and so they paid your train fare and your board fare, you know, got a warrant. They were too far away, didn't they? They had no leaves, at least I didn't have any leaves. From leaving this country, I had no leaves to come back. And,
so the whole purpose of this 8 weeks at Strental was really for further training?
Oh, yeah. as I say, we threw the hand grenade and were introduced to the Sten gun.
What was the Sten gun like?
It was dangerous. It was really effective at 25 yards.
It was a light machine gun.
Mm. It was, we were told, it was designed during the war because we captured that much German ammunition when we were starting to win. Our rifles, the rifle and the Ben gun was 303. The Sten gun was 9mm. And the German was 9mm. So this Sten gun was not to get it to use 9mm ammunition.
What was it like?
It was a short, it was designed for house cleaning. So it was very short, it had a short barrel. You put, there was like a handguard on. The barrel was only about that long.
So it was only about what?
5 or 6 inches. And it had a grip on, so you didn't burn your hand. The magazine went in at the side. And the work party and like the trigger down in there, and you cocked it a little bit, cocked it on a big spring, and you push it back. But if you had a magazine on, and you jumped off the wagon, and the butt hit the button, the gun used to go off. And it was nobody liked it, you know. As I say, it's only effective at 25 yards, which was for house to house cleaning. I did it for in the cellar of a house, and you could go in there. The magazine held 32 rounds, I think it was. And, you know, you'd go and spray the room, you know, a rifle would be too clumsy to be in. And it was automatic as well. So, yeah.
Was it fully automatic? You couldn't switch it to single shot?
I can't remember. But I think it was automatic.
And did everybody have to be proficient with the Sten gun?
Yeah, they were fine. Yeah, they were fine. And you only put one magazine on it. But when we got away and we were in Korea, we put taped two magazines together. And we just took one out and put it in.
How was that issued, the Sten gun then? Were certain people selected to use it?
Supposedly NCOs and that, you know. They didn't have it. And when you were doing the training with it, they used to take it a bit. Part of the training at Stranson, you had to go up onto Whitby Moors. There was a camp just outside Whitby, Nissen Huts. And we used to take it there for that. It was at least a fortnight. And we used to, it was known as the Filing Days. I think it's still known as Filing Days.